Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
This is WEEI Afternoons
with Andy Hart, Nick Fitzy Stevens,
and three-time Super Bowl champion Ted Johnson on WEEI.
Three, as in the Red Sox magic number right now, heading toward the postseason, but also the clock. And Ted Johnson joins us at three to do a three-point stance. Ted, how are we feeling today?
I'm feeling great. I'm excited to be at work today. I just love the baseball talk, the playoffs. You guys did a great job with Cora. There's a lot of fun topics to get into today. I got my boy Kevin Stevens and his sister Kelly coming in about an hour to talk about their foundation. They're great people. I can't wait for that. So a lot of good vibes coming into work today.
All right, let's bring those good vibes to the three-point stance.
319!
Ready!
319!
319's hot!
Yeah, there you go!
What's that? What's that?
It's the three-point stance.
I'm going to count to three.
Tatum puts up a three. Bam!
Easy as one, two, three.
Pastrnak, a hat trick, and a 4-3 Boston lead.
Three.
And it is gone! A three-run homer, and the game is tied.
On WEEI Afternoons.
Time for today's three-point stance here on WEEI Afternoons, brought to you by Jeffrey Glassman Injury Lawyers, Boston's go-to injury attorney for over 30 years. If you've been hurt in a car or work accident, you and your good vibes got to get Glassman. Call all sevens at 617-777-7777. 3 o'clock here on WEEI Afternoons, three hosts, each of which will present their stances on the biggest stories in Boston sports and beyond. Andy Hart, you'll lead us off. You get 60 seconds for your opening stance. Are you ready?
Absolutely.
All right, here's 60 seconds, and I can't wait to see what trade you cooked up today.
Nope, I'm done with that. That didn't go well on social media. So today, I'm reacting a little bit more to the Jason Tatum car wash of PR appearances yesterday. First of all, I was finally told he was representing a pharmaceutical company.
Yeah.
So that was part of it there. So I think that makes me put some of the comments in perspective. Oh, you want me to believe that your rehab and your advancements are ahead of schedule, probably at least in part due to this pharmaceutical company. So there's a financial tie in there. Then the other thing hit me. So he wants to play next year, or at least isn't saying he's not playing. And he has a date circled. And a lot of people are like, oh, my God,
when
could it
be? What's the date?
Yeah, all of it. All that. So he's going to return. And then I was like, you need to be really careful, Jason Tatum. I don't think you should be all in on returning if it puts even a 0.5% risk for your long-term health or re-injury. Because you shouldn't be all in for one simple reason. The Boston Celtics are not all in. They dismantled the team, and we all accepted that this was a bridge year. They were treating it like a bridge year, that Jaylen Brown would be running the team, it will be less talented, expectations will be reined in, that it was going to be a financial reset year, the aprons were all considerations, new ownership, it was all... And now Jason Tatum's going to lay it all on the line to get back out there as soon as possible? To what end? If you were going to do that and the team had known that, then maybe they shouldn't have dismantled and they should have said, well, Jason Tatum's going to be back, so let's run it back with Porzingis. We can still win a title. So, Jason Tatum, I appreciate the attitude, I appreciate the effort and the energy, but be careful. The team's not all in, so neither should you be.
That was a good one.
Felt good?
Yeah.
Yeah, it felt good.
That felt good.
That felt real good.
I didn't really stumble or anything. Finished kind of right on the post.
Are you surprised by the fact he's basically dangling that carrot out there? So to kind of keep people on the hook. I think it's a ploy by the team and him to kind of keep people engaged and interested. If they think that he's coming back, maybe the players play a little bit harder. Maybe the fan support is there from the beginning. If they feel like he's not going to have any chance to play this year, then the fans won't show up. The players won't play as hard. So I think part of it is to kind of raise everybody's expectations, at least early on, just in case. What I think is, I think it's a slim chance he does, but just in case if he does, that it keeps everyone fully engaged from the very beginning.
So I'm glad you brought that up. Sort of the reasons he would do it, is he being a good salesman, first of all, PR man for the company he's working for and probably making tens of millions of dollars. Well,
whatever this pharmaceutical company is, is it because of the pharmaceuticals he's taken is the reason he's getting back so fast?
I don't know, but it doesn't hurt that he's coming back fast.
No, it doesn't.
Now, the procedure, his age, the doctors are very confident. They are also apparently amazed with what he's doing. But I'm glad you brought, you're a player. You were a player. You had significant injuries. And what is, forget all that stuff. Forget the team stuff and the marketing stuff and all that. Just as a player, do you have to have that carrot in your own life to get through rehab? You know, as he said, he's rehabbing 6 days a week. Do you need to at least have that motivation? Because then it's easier to skip something or not go quite as hard if you have a full year off.
Yeah, I'll give you an example. So in 1998, I tore my other bicep, my left bicep, yep, in training camp, first week. And I was thinking that they might put me on IR for the whole season. They didn't. And I didn't come back until week 10. But the fact they didn't put me on IR, I thought Pete would put me on. He didn't. Kept me motivated in my rehab. So that I was like, well, I'm going to come around. It's week 10, week 11. Okay. And still maybe have a chance to help this team, finish strong and get into the playoffs. So there's something to that from the player's psychological standpoint that if you've think you can maybe come back, you hold on that hope to just give you a little extra boost in your effort in rehab and coming back. So, okay. Yeah, there's something to that.
And then another example, Fitzy, would be, and I don't know what role this played in it at all, but if you remember, the Patriots, after Teddy Bruschi had a stroke, didn't put him on IR. He was placed on PUP, which left a little sliver window like, oh, could this guy actually come back? And he did, and he came back, and it was a whole story. I wonder if that helped motivate him, knowing.
I feel like part of him is doing it for the team. Like, they're like, hey, if you say you're coming back sooner than people think, it will increase. You know, look, that one player is the most important piece to this team.
Yeah.
So it's a bigger deal to the fans and to the media and the people that cover the team. If they think he's coming back, it just keeps everyone more engaged early on when they might not have been otherwise if they knew he wasn't coming back.
Fitzy, is there a downside? Is there a downside
sure,
to people think? No. Him coming back, yes.
Oh.
But is there a downside to just having people think he could come back?
Go ahead.
Of course there is. The expectations that could be created, the false hope that could pump into fans, like, hey, halfway through the season, Tatum's going to come back. And then he doesn't come back. And he's doing the right thing. And he's actually taking the full year that it usually takes for people to recover from a severely ruptured Achilles. And I don't care if it was speed bridge, any bridge, how well he's rehabbing. Yeah, him coming back, as some Twitter doctors have suggested, in late December or January would be miraculous. And what a boost that would be for fan base, for team, everyone and everything. But you got to manage the expectations because it's a significant, significant injury.
And there is a similar issue that you can compare to with the Patriots right now. If you think of Christian Gonzalez, if they said, you know, when the first injury first happened, you know what, he's going to be on IR, you don't expect him until week 5, nobody would think anything about it.
Right.
But no, he's going to be ready for week 1. He's going to be out there. Okay. And now that he's not, he's getting a lot of kind of hate. He's getting a lot of people calling him out, a lot of people wondering what's going on because he did not fulfill the timeline that was artificially put out there by whoever and whatever. And so now he's looked at. So there's a risk to me, but if he's going to put out there that he's coming back and he doesn't, it'll look bad on Jason Tatum.
I would just be careful if I were him. He's still very much in the middle of his career.
I would too, man.
He's not anywhere near the end like Aaron Rodgers a couple years ago. You're near the end. So if you ruin the last couple of years, whatever, to take a shot. Remember when he was going to come back in December if they were in the playoff hunt or whatever that was going to be? Jason Tatum, you have a half a career in front of you. So just be careful because, yeah, the team didn't exactly invest in this season.
The last question I want to get you guys to quickly to weigh in on, your expectations for roughly where the Celtics finish standing-wise this season, and then how much does a Jason Tatum return impact your expectations for what they can do? Are they a championship contender with him returning in that January window?
No, because there's no way he can return and be Jason Tatum, right? He's not going to be, oh my God, I'm going to score 30 points and have all these assists. And so even if he's out there, I mean, I'm not a doctor. I'm just kind of assuming here that there would be limits on his minutes and that, because you talk about in the playoffs, a guy like Jason Tatum in the playoffs plays like the whole game, basically. Like, they have to ramp up their minutes to like 40 minutes a game. I can't imagine coming off a torn Achilles, they're going to be willing to do that. So, no, you know my hopes are they're a top four seed. They're in the top half of the Eastern Conference. Then he joins them, and yes, I'll be talking about maybe sneaking into the Eastern Conference Finals, maybe making a little run. But do I think they're a championship contender? Like, they're going to go at the Thunder? No, I don't think so.
But what if he's got three and a half months to get in? Let's say he comes back in January and he's playing 14, 16 minutes a night, and then it ramps up to 20, and then he's up to 25. So that by April, once you get your seeding, he feels comfortable playing 30, 35 minutes a night. Like Jason Tatum, and I will put nothing beyond two things. One, Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum being motivated and playing at their best together is the true Boston Garden, Boston Celtics version of Batman and Robin. And two, Trader Brad, figuring out something to do with the deadline if he believes Jason Tatum is well enough that this team could make a run at it.
Well, that would be my unknown. If they get a feeling like, oh, Tatum is going to be Tatum come postseason. And we did kind of dismantle the roster. Maybe we should, I don't know, mantle it back up. I don't even know if that's how you say that, but go get somebody.
Remantle.
It. Because I was going to joke, like, is he bringing Porzingis with him when he comes back? No. So, yes, if that happens, Fitzy, if he
Drew
comes...
Drew Holiday's not coming back.
Right. But if somebody else comes back because Brad Stevens sees Tatum midwinter and says, Tatum is going to be Tatum by the time the playoffs are here, I need to add to this roster, figures out a way to do it, well, that is a way I could talk myself into
it. That's the only way, in my opinion. Otherwise, I don't give them much of a chance. Like, I mean, I think... You know, Cleveland's going to be better. I mean, the Pacers. There's
Thunder.
There's a lot of unknowns. You know, there's a lot of unknowns with this roster. You know, is Peyton Pritchard going to step up? Is Sam Hauser going to step up? Who's the go-to big man? I mean, right now, I mean, you're looking at really is Xavier Tillman, is he your guy? So is Derek, you know, White? Can he handle a role that's he's never been counted. He's kind of been the sixth guy off the bench. He came in. He started last year, but it was in a role where you weren't focused in on him. So to me, there's just a lot of questions with the roster. And even when he comes back, I could see it being a little clunky trying to integrate himself back into the offense. Yeah.
That's also a part of it, and we'll have plenty of time to deal with this. But JB with the whole team, then potentially JB with Tatum, but Tatum's on a minutes restriction.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, Tatum's fine, so JB, you take a back seat again, and you're like, wait a minute, for 6 months I've been in the front seat.
Right, and is this team going to continue to shoot up threes? Because he's not going to be beating guys off the dribble, going to the rim.
How do you know? You ever watch a good Disney movie? What if he's more explosive after this surgery?
Okay, well then.
I don't know if it's going to be Rookie of the Year, the basketball edition.
Wow, I don't, I agree. I just think it's, I don't see him, I'm just curious what the philosophy is going to be for this offense, considering the teams we saw in the finals last year compared to how the Celtics play basketball, which I think is probably not the direction they need to go. So I just think it won't be as an easy transition as you guys might think.
All right, we'll leave that one there for the time being. Because Nick Fitzy-Stevens, it is your turn. Are you ready?
I most indeed am, and I feel as though this is quite germane to the conversation.
Perfect. Well, here's 60 seconds to prove it. Go ahead.
Stanley, can I have some audio, please?
Fair to say you're playing this Sunday?
I'm excited.
All right, there you go. He's excited. I'm excited. You're excited. We should all be excited, folks, because I am here to tell you, without any declaration, insider knowledge, or certainty whatsoever, that Christian Gonzalez is playing on Sunday. Yes, finally. Our long, local, regional, if not semi-national nightmare is going to come to an end, and Christian Gonzalez, number zero on the field, number one in your defensive Patriots' hearts, will be back on the field Sunday. Now, if I'm to take anything from what he said and his coach said earlier today, Christian Gonzalez said, quote, about this narrative, I never don't want to play. That narrative that's out there, I don't know where people get it from, but all I want to do is play football. He also added that he was very upset that he didn't get put into the starting lineup and was told on Saturday he was going to be a scratch. Mike Vrabel said the decision not to play Gonzo last weekend was his and his alone out of an abundance of caution. He said also that he was going to ramp it up in hopes that he could play this coming Sunday, and it couldn't come at a better time because you're concluding the first month of football where the Patriots have played more sloppy than not. They're 1-2, and they really could use the win on Sunday. Christian Gonzalez and getting out there and testing himself against someone like Tet McMillan, who in the slot and on the outside is averaging almost 16 yards a catch, would be a great re-entry. And then you hit the ground running in October, and maybe we'll finally see what this Pats defense is all about.
I mean, I would argue a better time would have been week one or week two. But yeah, he's getting out there, and we're avoiding the absolute crap show that if he missed this week, everybody would be like, wait, why didn't you put him on IR if he was going to miss all 4 weeks? Right. That makes no sense, which Bert Breer brought up. We're going to talk about that next segment. So I think you want him back out there. And obviously, Tet McMillan has been a human highlight reel down in Carolina.
Dude is special. Dude is way more special than I think a lot of people that back in April said, oh, I would never want to make Tet McMillan wide receiver one.
I like the guy,
he's
too.
Good.
Like, have you heard him talk?
Tet?
Yeah.
I don't think I have, Ted.
I vibe with him. I like just his overall mindset. I think it's I think he's going to be a hell of a player just based off of his mindset.
But yeah, it does seem that we're going to get some Christian Gonzalez on Sunday against the Panthers, and the sooner the better, because
got that right.
He's the best player on the team. It's like the simplest argument why you're better with him out. He's the best player on the team. Let's just move on.
It's funny. We were debating this whether or not he'd have a big impact last week going into the Steelers game, and I think we all kind of said, yeah, he'd have a positive impact, but it wouldn't be a drastic impact. And then you look at how things played out. Yeah. I mean, it's just a play here or a penalty here. A touchdown given up there to a different guy.
You mean Alex Austin?
Alex Austin and Carlton Davis, for that matter.
Yeah, but Davis would still be out there if Gonzo
were
out
there.
But
he might
Austin
not have been
isn't.
On, you know, DK Metcalf for that touchdown. It might have been Christian Gonzalez covering DK.
Yeah.
So one play could have made the difference. Is my point, and Christian Gonzalez would have maybe been the difference in winning and losing that game.
Yeah, the point was made in the postgame show and on Monday again that if Ramondre Stevenson doesn't play that game last Sunday, the Patriots very well win. If Christian Gonzalez plays last Sunday, you could very well argue the Patriots escape, even in the face of all of their own mistakes, miscues, and fumbles, that they actually do win. So yeah. I don't care if there was a setback, no setback, why he didn't play prior to now. Getting him back now would be dynamite.
It doesn't sound like there was a setback.
Depends who you believe.
And we'll get to that. We'll get to that next segment. We'll play both audios, and you can believe what you choose to believe. But in the meantime, Ted Johnson, are you ready?
I am.
All right. Here is 60 seconds. Go ahead.
All right. So I just want Stiz to play. I want you guys to listen to Bill Parcells. This was his Hall of Fame introduction into the Patriots Hall of Fame this past Saturday. Just listen to what he had to say about his time coming back.
This place has a place in my heart. It always will. We sometimes reflect on things, and you wish you would have done things a little differently. Well, when I come back here and I see this, I wish I would have done things a little differently.
How about that? You had Dan Shaughnessy got caught up with Coach Parcells after the ceremony to just kind of follow up on what he meant with those comments. And this is what he told Dan. He said, quote, I don't want to leave this ambiguous. I should have been more patient with new ownership. That's all. I could have stayed a little longer. But you get into situations, you give people your word, you can't back out. And that's basically what happened. I see what they accomplished, and it just makes you think that maybe you could have done something like that. But you never know. It wouldn't have been the same as it is, probably. I think I overreacted. Basically, he, being Robert Kraft, always liked me, but I was a little bit of a blank at the time. I like his honesty, and I like him just kind of his humility and basically saying, owning his part in it. And I respect the hell out of Coach. He's a tough man, a prideful man. But to see him at that event, I mean, he even says in this article, he was hugging, you know, he was hugging guys. He says, when you feel genuine love and affection from another man, it's pretty powerful. I felt that about 10 times this weekend, crying, hugging, I love yous. It was genuine, and I repeated it itself. This is a special thing, and it was emotionally very powerful. So kudos to Coach Parcells for owning his part and humbling himself to say that. It goes a long way, I think, around here. And I don't know, maybe we'll see Robert Kraft say something similar about Coach, and that would be a nice kind of thing if he did that.
Yeah, Coach Parcells, 84 years old, and I do feel like as he's aged, he's realized, like, you don't need to keep up the feuds or the hatchets.
The point?
Yeah, like, you know, we're all going to end up in the same place, so maybe kind of try to clean things up before you end up in that place. Now, if I was going to poke holes in one of his comments, he did say, you know, but I had already given somebody my word. I assume he's talking about the Jets.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like at some point you gave the Patriots your word, too, so you're picking which side of your word you're sticking with. But these coaching deals, I mean, he's not the first, and he wasn't the first, and he won't be the last of these crazy coaching endings and guys going from this place to the, I mean, there's literally thousands of them that happen when you go back. Lane Kiffin. We were talking about Lane Kiffin yesterday. There's a new documentary coming out sort of detailing Lane Kiffin and Al Davis and what went wrong with the Raiders, and there's just a lot that goes on.
But do you think today's NFL coaches yield the same power in an organization like Parcells did or Belichick did?
No.
I feel like today's young coaches, they're not seeking to take over the whole operation. Like Bill Parcells and Bill Belichick very much wanted to take over their operations.
Yeah.
I don't think coaches are wired that way.
That's a good point. I'd have to think a little deeper about guys, but you're right. They're not as dictatorial, if that is the word or whatever, where they are like, this is my kingdom and I'm in full control or I'm not in control at all.
You see that more in college now, I think, than you will see in the pros.
And Dabo Sweeney checking in.
And in the post-Belichick era, I kind of think, save for the few that are going to be grandfathered in, like a McVay or an Andy Reid, who are true offensive geniuses, I don't think you're going to see that very, very much and very often. And you know what? Good for Coach Parcells to not leave an emotional end like that untied, because he does belong in that Hall of Fame and he belongs in the good graces of Pats fans like myself.
You get the sense that Andy Reid yields a ton of power or Nick Sirianni in Philly?
No.
It's
not in that way. And I like Reid, I don't even think he wants it.
He just wants
a good football team.
Yeah.
And like every once in a while, does he maybe have to tell, I don't even know, the Veach or whatever guy, like, no, I want this player over that player. Every once in a while. And the guy's probably like, okay, because you don't do it all the time. We're not button heads all the time. We put raw. Yeah, it's a great point. And Fitzy, it's a great point by you. It's definitely more the world of college football now.
No doubt.
That mentality still takes hold. All right, that's going to do it for our three-point stances this afternoon. Coming up next, we're going to dig a little bit deeper into this Christian Gonzalez situation that is about to no longer be a situation, because once he steps on the field and starts playing, we can stop talking about his hamstring and setbacks that did or didn't happen. But for now, we need to get into Giardi's words, Breer's words, and Christian Gonzalez's words all next here on WEEI Afternoons. But first, Dan Ball has what's trending.
The exclusive home for Patriots Monday and Friday.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
Trending now on WEEI, brought to you by Mario's Roofing. We won't soak you to keep you warm and dry. The Red Sox won their first game in Toronto against the Blue Jays last night. The final score was 4-1. Justin Wilson picked up the win in relief. Aroldis Chapman recorded his 32nd save. Nathaniel Lowe and Carlos Narvaez picked up two RBIs apiece. Game 2 of that series is tonight. First pitch at 7:07. Garrett Crochet will start opposite Max Scherzer. Here is your lineup for tonight as the Red Sox run it back with the same 9. Jaron Duran in left, Trevor Story at short. Alex Bregman at third. Masataka Yoshida is your DH. Romy Gonzalez at second, Seidan Rafaela in center, Nathaniel Lowe at first, Willier Abreu in right, and Carlos Narvaez is your catcher, and he is batting ninth. You can listen to tonight's game on WEEI FM 93.7 and across the Shaw's and Star Market WEEI Red Sox Radio Network. Shaw's, go shopping, get rewarded. Mass Mutual pregame show with Christian Arcan is tonight at 6:07, and Will Fleming and Mike Monaco have the call of the game. New from earlier this afternoon from ESPN's Jeff Passan, the Nationals are finalizing a deal to name Paul Toboni their new head of baseball operations. Toboni rose rapidly to become assistant GM of the Red Sox and is widely regarded as one of the best young executives in Major League Baseball. The Patriots return to the practice field this afternoon. New England hosts the Carolina Panthers on Sunday afternoon. Kickoff is at 1 p.m. Both teams are 1-2 on the campaign. Some practice squad movement for the Patriots as defensive back Tyron Herring has been signed. He entered the NFL as an undrafted free agent out of Dartmouth in Delaware back in May. Defensive back Corey Ballantyne was released, and the Browns signed tackle Thayer Munford Jr. off of New England's practice squad, replacing injured tackle DeJuan Jones. From around the league, the Texans released safety C.J. Gardner-Johnson on Tuesday after reports that the player had struggled to pick up Coach D'Amico Ryan's defensive scheme this season. And the Jets acquired cornerback Jarvis Brownlee Jr. and a 2026 seventh-round pick in exchange for a 2026 sixth-round choice. And finally, the Bruins came back from down 4-1 after two periods to beat the Rangers 5-4 in overtime in their second preseason contest. Nikita Zadorov scored the game-winning goal. Homeowners choose Mario's Roofing because they're fair, honest, and provide quality services. Call Mario's Roofing today for a free estimate at 781-344-2420. I'm Dan Ball. This is Trending Now on WEEI and WEEI.com. More afternoons coming up right after this.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, more of WEEI Afternoons
with Hart, Fitzy, and Johnson.
Back here on WEEI Afternoons, reminder, about 15 minutes from now, we'll talk to Adam Schefter about a lot of things, NFL and probably Tom Brady, based on his $75 million question mark, engagement to play flag football, also yep. His... No, nothing to see here about conflicts of interest, but let's go to the phone lines now. We got a couple of calls from the Parcells story, the Hall of Fame. Let's go to Sarah in Massachusetts. She has a Parcells story. What's up, Sarah?
Hi. You guys are doing a terrific job recapping that event. My husband and I, 10 years ago, went for his 50th birthday, actually, went to Saratoga, and we'd never been to the horse races, and we ran into Bill Parcells while we were there, and he couldn't have been a nicer guy. I didn't know he even had an interest in horses, so that was, you know, fascinating. And he was friendly to everybody, shaking hands, waving. It was just a great encounter. And then, to make a short story longer, from there we went to Cooperstown, and we saw Pedro and some other great players go into the Hall of Fame.
All right, thanks for the call, Sarah. Yeah. That sounds like a nice little trip. Parcells and Pedro.
Really good trip.
Some all-time greats.
I heard Cooperstown is worth the effort.
Unbelievable.
That's what I've heard. You've been there?
Yeah, oh, yeah. It is.
You recommend it?
Very much so.
Okay.
Very, very much so. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, if you do it related to the induction ceremony, it's going to be mobbed and crowded. Yep. But it's a cool town anytime, like in the summer to visit. Beautiful. I would definitely put it on. Yeah. I don't know if you can go that far. Can you do the Harley a couple stops along the way, make it a long weekend?
Yeah.
Because I feel like that could be a ride for you.
Well, my kids play these colleges where I've driven through Cooperstown to go see their games.
Oh, then stop.
So next time there's a game where I drive through Cooperstown, I'm going to actually pull over and check it out.
Absolutely. Let's go to Paulie in Dedham. What's up, Paulie?
Hey, a couple of things. Quick, now, hang on with me, Andy. Bear with me. First on Kevin Stevens. Great guy. I went to school with him over at BC. I used to hang around with the hockey team intermittently. Great guy, real gentleman, quiet. All of them were nice. Neil Shea was our captain. Neil Shea made me feel like I was on the team. One of the single best leader I was ever around was Neil. But I love those guys, every single one of them. Kevin loved my slap shot. But anyway, it'll be nice to hear from him. Yeah, great kid. Used to hang around with Jay Adams, which is he was one of the captains of the baseball team. They were together a lot. But yeah, Ryan, the football, I was there the other day on the stage. I was looking for you as you were going up along the building to get to the stage.
Yep.
I couldn't spot you out, but I spotted Zolak. I was standing there with Al from Everett. I bumped into Al down there. And we had a blast. Al was wearing a gold shirt with like blue lettering. Said, "Bill Parcells, the greatest coach ever."
Love it,
you know. And Zolak's attention. He came over, reached over to the crowd, and fist pumped Al for me. And then I finally got Parcells' attention. He was the last one there, just standing at the end of that line. Mm-hmm. Adam was there. We had a couple words with Adam, and I was telling him, "You're the greatest slot receiver ever."
All right, thanks for the call, Paul.
Love it.
I feel like I gave him his time. Long runway there. All right, now we need to get to this situation, as I said, and it started first off with our guy on a Friday at Fenway, Mike Giardi, and his comments, his report on Christian Gonzalez.
There was a setback. I mean, they haven't said it. I mean, Mike sort of said it a couple weeks ago without saying it, but, like, there's no question. Like, they believed, and they let everybody know that's in with their, you know, their management group that, oh, he'll be fine for week one. He'll be fine for week one. And then all of a sudden you got to maybe post Minnesota and those joint practices. And that was like, I don't know, maybe this is lingering. And so, yeah, now we're at a point where what hasn't practiced since July 28th. I don't know. You know, you hope next Wednesday he's out to practice. But at this point, I couldn't tell you whether he will be or not.
So there was a setback, according to Mike Giardi.
Mm-hmm.
They told everybody, you know, that he was going to be there. Then there was a setback somewhere along the lines with the Minnesota and the joint practices. Mm. Well, last night, Burt Breer went on NBC Sports Boston. And apparently he did some digging and he has some interesting information.
I've dug around on this the last couple of weeks. And like what I found is there wasn't a setback, which I think almost makes it worse. You know what I mean? Like, I think it's almost like, all right, like, so we expect, and I know their full expectation when he got hurt at the end of July was that he was going to be ready for week one. But even more recently, like, they could have put him on IR before week one, right? Like, I'm talking about the week of week one. They could have put him on IR and shelved him for the first 4 weeks. If he misses this game, now we're at 4 weeks, which means he's not just behind schedule for where they thought he would be in July. He's behind schedule for where they thought he would be at the beginning of September. So there are some moving parts here. I don't think there's a ton of ill will. I do think there's frustration. And I do think that there's a piece of this, which, I mean, look, like the more, I think there's a natural piece to this that comes in the NFL when a player is on the edge of becoming very, very wealthy, where there are natural questions that come up. Are you being careful? Are we being careful?
There is a lot there. First of all, according to Burt Breer and his sources, and they are both tied in. I just want to be clear. Mike Giardi has great sources. Burt Breer has great sources. There was a setback. There's no setback. Both could get that information. And I know they both can't be true, but both could get that information. So then he says something to the effect of there's no ill will, but there's frustration. I don't know. Is frustration ill will? Like, is that parsing of words there? Certainly, that's interesting.
They seem adjacent, or they would be, they're neighborly.
Very neighborly. And then he brings up, well, when a player is about to get really rich, and you're like, oh, so you, like Vrabel, are bringing money into this and the contract into this that's on the horizon.
What do you mean, like this. Vrabel?
Vrabel brought that up. There was a question early on where Vrabel was asked about Gonzalez, and he talked about convincing Gonzalez that building his own value can come through basically helping the team. Like, he brought up value. And everybody was like, why are you bringing up value and contract for a guy you can't sign yet? Hmm. You can't sign him until after the year. You can't. It has to be 3 years in before he can do his deal.
I don't know. Do you like that comment?
From Vrabel?
Yeah.
No, I did not. I did not like it at all.
If you're Christian Gonzalez and you hear that, what are you thinking?
Well, I'm thinking like Ty Law. I'm the head of Ty Law, Inc., and I'm looking out for myself.
Correct.
So I'll play for you, and I'll help you, but
My feeling is I can imagine that maybe Christian Gonzalez hears that and like, yeah, you want me out there because it's in your best interest to have me out there. And players' best interest isn't necessarily in the team's best interest, right? So there's conflicts there naturally. This is interesting. I'm curious to see if he plays even this week.
He's going to play this week. Okay. We have some audio that we will get to later in the show. Christian Gonzalez, I very much believe, will be on the field against Carolina. But up next on this show will be Adam Schefter, his weekly check-in, talking Tom Brady, the NFL, and all things Patriots. That's next here on WEEI Afternoons.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to WEEI Afternoons with Hart, Fitzy, and Johnson.
WEEI Afternoons. Let's go right to the phone lines for our weekly chat with Adam Schefter. ESPN's Adam Schefter is brought to you by your New England Chevy dealers. Together, let's drive. And by Jeanne d'Arc Credit Union, tackling financial wellness since 1912. Stronger members, stronger communities. Learn more at jdcu.org. Mr. Schefter, how are we doing this week?
Andy, Nick, Ted, how are we doing today?
We're good, Adam. We're good. This may seem like a strange question, especially at this point in the process, but you're the guy with all the information. And I wanted to ask you, what is your understanding as to what Jerod Mayo is doing and why he's not coaching right now? We basically haven't seen him save for one little appearance on the field at a Tennessee Volunteers football game. So what's your information there?
Well, I have no concrete information other than to say typically when a coach is one and done and he's got multiple years in his contract and he goes through what Jerod Mayo did last year, typically you're not in any rush to jump back in. You probably feel like somebody broke up with you prematurely. You probably feel like you need some time to process it, think about it, digest it, recover from it, because I think most coaches who get fired initially build up a little bit of scar tissue. And I think probably everybody reevaluated, do I want to keep doing this? Do I want to pursue this again? Do I want to try something else? And you certainly don't have to rush to go do anything because you're being paid and you're going to be paid for multi-years, right? So, I mean, we've seen any number of coaches go through this over time. So I'm speaking more generally, not to Jerod Mayo's specific situation, but having dealt with enough coaches over time who have been fired, you know, I've seen this happen and I've seen what they go through and everybody's different, but the concepts are pretty much the same, right? So I would imagine they're probably the same in this particular case as well.
That's interesting. You know, I have been looking at that with a critical eye, but those are good points, Adam, for sure. Earlier today, you tweeted out, you know, some of the excerpts from Tom Brady's weekly newsletter, and it entitled "Do Your Job," and it was just interesting some of the words he chose to use. You know, when it comes to this deal about you know, the conflict of interest being in the booth as the owner of the part owner of the Raiders while doing TV, and he used some strong words saying that only the paranoid and distrustful believe there's conflict in his roles. What's your feeling, overall feeling on this whole thing, and where do you feel this is all going to end here?
Well, you know, listen, I think Tom feels very strongly about this. Like, he feels like he's not doing anything wrong, and he feels like, as he said, that it's his duty and obligation and responsibility to grow the game and teach it the right way and influence others in any number of ways, whether it's with providing quarterback tips or tips about wellness, you know, or looking after your body or thinking about things a certain way. Like, I mean, he's so successful in so many ways that he wants to have a positive impact. He doesn't view it that way.
Yeah.
As he outlined in that, he just doesn't. And he feels very strongly about it. And it's hard for him to imagine that people could and would question him on this. But yet there are. There are people who are uncomfortable with it. Like, there are teams who are uncomfortable with it. And the rules are set up to where he's not allowed in the buildings. He could go on Zoom calls. And so it's something. It's an interesting issue because it involves Tom Brady and everything with him seems to be interesting. So people like talking about it. If it were happening with, you know, somebody else, it wouldn't necessarily draw the amount of attention that it does. But because it's him, it does. So it's just one of these things. I don't know, like, what's going to happen. I think he's going to go on as a broadcaster with Fox. I think he's actually doing a really good job with that. He's gotten better, shown improvement. He wants to be involved with the Raiders. We've seen that. I think he loves all of this stuff, and my guess is he just keeps doing this.
Adam, is there any league-wide feeling as to what kind of start the Patriots have gotten off to vis-a-vis, like, surprise that they're 1-2, surprise that the team has committed so many penalties, or surprise that the team has been so turnover-friendly? You know what I mean? Like, Mayo was kicked to the curb to bring in Vrabel for a reason, and things have been a little messy to start off.
Well, I think that the start has to be a little bit disappointing. 1-2, the schedule was set up for them to, I think, have a little bit better of a start than they did. They could have and should have won that game. They could have and should have beaten the Raiders. Like, they could be sitting here 3-0. They could be. They also could be 0-3. So that's kind of the way it works, kind of where it's been. Listen, I would imagine they're going to get better as the season goes on. It's a new culture. It's a new system. It's a new staff. They're trying to bring in some players. They keep getting their practice squad poached, which is interesting. So there must be a lot of talent on their practice squads other teams like. but, yeah, it takes some time. But, again, I think the start has to be a little bit disappointing so far.
Time to get this week's Drake Take from Adam Schefter, presented by your New England Chevy dealers. Together, let's drive. Adam, Drake played an interesting game last week, had the turnovers, but played relatively well. But it was a comment post-game I wanted to ask you about. There was a play before a goal line play. He got hit. His head hit the turf, the back of his head. He grabbed his head, but stayed in the game. And after the game was asked about it and said something to the effect, I learned a year ago, you got to get up quickly or the spotter will get you. And I wonder, is that the type of comment that the league would look into? Would they maybe advise him on how to comment on things like that? What's the reaction to that?
I think the team might say, hey, you know, be careful. Let's kind of keep things at a minimum. But no, he said what he said. By the way, he learned that. People learn things about that. You don't like to hear it. You know, if somebody's brain is injured, you want to see that they're treated and handled the right way. So, you know, I think the league is trying to change that culture. And that's an example that there's still some ways to go before the league gets to where it wants to be. Because when a player's saying that, he's admitting that, you know, you have to figure out ways to keep these guys from going back in the game or to, you know, being checked before they should be allowed back in. Everybody could see he banged his head. I was surprised he didn't go out. The eye in the sky missed it. Replay systems, whoever is in charge of that, they should have had him taken to the sideline. He threw an interception on the next play that was deflected. I have no idea whether that was a part of it or not. The fact that maybe he had some cobwebs, maybe it did, maybe it didn't. Maybe Cameron Hayward just made a good play there and got his hand up. You know, we'll never really know. But, you know, when you get your head like that, a player should, I know he's not going to want it, but he should want to get checked out. You know, he should need to get checked out. And the league has set up steps for that to happen, and it just hasn't always happened the way it should.
Yeah, players really need to be their own advocate in that case for sure, Adam. There's a few surprises that have kind of revealed themselves 3 weeks into the season, Adam. You know, the Colts are 3-0. You got the Ravens at 1-2. The Texans are 0-3 with you know, CJ Stroud, mm-hmm. which is surprising. The Chiefs 1-2. Which one of those teams is maybe the most surprising that you didn't see coming that are currently, you know, the Colts undefeated and the rest of the other teams I mentioned just not off to the starts they wanted. What's your biggest surprise of those teams?
I would say I'm going to answer it with one step ahead of you. The loser of Sunday's Chiefs Ravens game is the team that I'm surprised about because one of those teams is going to be 1-3, and you would not have expected either the Chiefs or the Ravens to be 1-3 when those two teams were many people's Super Bowl picks. But somebody's going to be 1-3 after Sunday. So I'll delay my answer until Sunday night and say the loser of that game would be my surprise, early disappointing team of the season in the first quarter.
Adam, there's a story about how next year there's going to be more, more AI, more technology, more robo umps in baseball. And I know we've got like the laser chain gang going on now in the NFL. Anything about any further use of AI, robotics, technology in officiating games? Well, seems like we haven't heard too much grousing about the officials so far this year.
Not so far. Usually teams aren't happy about it, but I would just think that as that becomes more and more a part of our society, It's only natural to think that somehow, some way, it'll become a part of football. And I'm sure that, you know, the NFL does a pretty good job of taking, of using technology to its advantage. And I don't know why that wouldn't be the next step in this.
All right, Adam, we'll get you out on this. It's an easy one, a yes or no. Is Tom Brady really making $75 million to play flag football?
Maybe.
I mean, all I could say is that number was floated out there. He responded that that wasn't true. I believe Tom, but I will say this. I'm sure there's a lot of money involved to get all those people to Saudi Arabia in March. I don't know what the numbers are, but I will bet you that they're big.
It's that. That's not the number. It's more than that.
It could be $100 million. Wow. All right, Adam.
Be nice.
Appreciate you joining us. We will talk to you again next week.
Have a great week, guys. Thanks for having me.
All right, thanks, Adam.
Thanks, Adam. Adam Schefter, ESPN, with us here on WEEI.
I've enjoyed Adam's interviews.
Absolutely.
Yeah, he's been great.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Adam's done a very good job. Now, I thought it was a really interesting answer, and we can put a pin in it to come back on it, because I know this is an area of your expertise. The Drake May comment about the spotter and what the league wants, but what the league is getting and how you make it all work. But up next here, we are going to talk about Drake May, because I don't know if you've noticed, I said on Monday I felt better about Drake May than a lot of people seemed. Now everybody's on the bandwagon. Every stat I read has Drake May in the top five, or he's a top 10 quarterback, or he's the greatest thing since sliced bread. So forget the wins. Forget the turnovers. Everybody loves them some Drake May. We're talking about it next here on WEEI Afternoons.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. You bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly what people outside of Cleveland think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.